bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting solutions.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Bagel Tech Photo, where we discuss the week's photography news, answer a few viewers' questions, and we've got a new segment this week, which we'll get to a bit later.
And it's not Will Green.
Well, no, he's not. He's new in it today, but he's not the section, if so I mean. Subsection, maybe.
He should be sectioned.
Yes.
Didn't you used to work in a mental hospital? Was it you?
Who?
You. Did you ever used to work in a mental hospital? Or I've got the wrong person.
Did you stay in a mental hospital?
No. I wasn't genuine. That was a genuine question, not a slur. I got it in my head that you used to work at a mental facility or something like that.
No, not me.
No, right, okay. Moving on. No. Sorry.
So anyway, joining me...
ahead of time.
It's a bit random, wasn't it?
Yeah, sorry. I just thought...
We have Mr. Ewan Rankin. How are you doing, sir?
I'm okay. I'm all right. Not too bad. I went out for lunch with the wife, and we went to a certain restaurant in Solihull and had something that tasted really nice, but all the way back, I've been a bit twitchy. So... I may have to dive for the toilet.
Oh, thanks for sharing that.
It's only on Hurlevision.
Okay. Also joining us, we have the irrepressible Will Green. How are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Mr. Photography. Oh,
Mr. Photography, I am.
Well, we can dive right into the news then, since we have this eclectic...
I haven't got a camera.
I was about to ask you. You just stole my... Have you bought a camera since your last visit to the photo show?
No.
Well, you got one on your phone, haven't you?
I suppose so.
It was good enough for Swagger.
You have a phone then, so...
I do have a phone, a fantastic 3GS. I was at a thing the other day, like this sort of tech meter, and the guy saw my phone. He said, well, the nice thing about having a 3GS is nobody's going to pinch it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That was Christian, mate. That was from Documentally.
I thought the camera on the 3G and 3GS were very underrated. They took very good quality pictures. State of the art was a little bit higher than that, but the quality of the images they took was just fine.
It was okay.
Yep. There you go.
Well, how about 41 megapixels on the new Nokia phone? How slick was that?
It's a good job Forsman's not here, isn't it?
He'd
want to fight. He's got a new article out. If you're not doing anything right this minute, then come back to the podcast in a second and go and read Chris Forsman's article on Ars Technica on the subject of the new Nokia 808, because it's not scathing. It tries to be balanced.
So, Ewan, what do you make of this Nokia 41 megapixel camera phone running on Symbian platform, which is kind of weird, I think.
I think you've got to be careful with this, because everyone's looking at the 41 megapixel thing, and the guy that was doing the press conference on Monday said, you know, everyone's going to focus on the megapixelage, and that's not the issue here. It's what we're doing in post-processing. It's how we're crunching the pixels and getting very small pixels to give higher quality output, and they're stacking them. So that's where they're getting the 41 from. It's not actually, I mean, your image that comes out isn't 41 pixels. It's only 10, isn't it, or 12 or something. Pretty low.
Yes, 14. It was quite low. Yeah.
So it's that's the key part, is the way in which they're gathering. I think what you're going to have to see here is the fact that this is kind of like a proof of concept that's been shoved in a platform, like a phone, and it could be the benchmark going forwards for how they crunch pixels in larger format cameras in the years to come. But I've also looked at a couple of the images, and okay, they're very well taken in very good light, very stable and that kind of stuff. But if they're cell phone images, I ain't got a problem with them. They look good. They look really good. Not great in low light, but I mean, we're talking about comparisons with other cell phones, then it's great.
Mm-hmm. Is it actually Nokia designed the lens and the camera and everything in this, or did they use someone else's?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, and I'm quite willing to admit that I haven't read the story enough to know who's done the development here, but what I got the impression of is that Nokia has paid for the development for this, or assisted with the development for this, but hasn't done it themselves. It's someone else's technology that they've kind of nurtured. because I can't see that Nokia would do this in-house. It's just so far out of their ballpark.
It certainly seems that way.
I mean, if they have, great, well done to them. But.
So, Will, do you think you'll be getting this Nokia? Will you be trading in your iPhone 3GS?
So, is that a phone or is it just a camera?
No, it's a phone.
It's a phone, is that?
It's a primarily a phone.
The as a sort of lifelong Scion fan, the Symbian operating system was sort of developed from the original Scion operating system that used to run the 5MX and stuff like that. And I've always rated it as an operating system. And how people can criticize them using this fantastic operating system rather than crappy mobile stuff from Windows, I don't get. How can people possibly criticize it for that?
I've got to say, Will, that I've had a Symbian phone and I always thought the operating system was reliable, which is 10 times more than what you want.
It's solid as a rock. It really is solid as a rock. I know they're making Symbian open source as well now. So I was quite surprised. I just read the article to see that they have used it. But it's nice that they're sort of keeping the faith because it is a great operating system. And I've never liked the Windows operating system on any mobile device. Mind you, I haven't tried the very newest
one. I was about to say, have you not tried the new Metro Star one?
No. I tried Windows CE back in the day and I've tried various incarnations since. Before the iPhone came out, and when the iPhone came out, I never looked at a Windows device again.
I think the thing that's surprising here is the fact that because Nokia's so heavily into Microsoft and they've got this huge tie-up now, the fact that they've gone with Symbian just to push this out quickly seems retrograde. That's where I think a lot of the flak's coming from. You know, they've kind of jumped into bed, said that we're going forward with Microsoft, and then all of a sudden, well, hang on, we can't make this work if we don't use the Symbian system. But I agree with Will. I think the people are wrong to slag off Symbian.
Yeah, I just think it's dated now. It appears to be dated because they said themselves they weren't going to develop it anymore, I thought, last year, I think.
Yeah, they made it
beginning of the last year as well. They've just got to concentrate on the Windows, the new Windows phone, the Metro system. I think.
Is it Windows Mobile 8, is it? Or 7?
No, 8 will be the next one. The current one is just Windows Phone. It had some really stupid long title, but then they had to shorten it because it was getting too complicated for people.
I think the other thing that you've got with the Symbian operating system is the fact that I know Chris is saying this in his article, that he there's a suggestion that because it's Symbian, it won't actually get sent to the US. So it's not going to actually be a commercially available phone as widely as it could possibly make. It's going to end up being fairly niche and probably just proof of concept in the end.
Yeah, I can't imagine many people we've wanted. If it's not iOS, if it's not Android, if it's not now Windows, which is sort of gaining some market share, I don't think people will go back to Symbian. It might be a great camera and stuff, but I don't think people, when they walk into Carphone Warehouse and stuff, they will not be looking for an older looking OS.
Well, here's a question to both of you. Do apps sell phones or do specs sell phones?
A bit of both, I think. I can't separate them.
I think tariff, if anything, for me, to sell a phone. I mean, I've just swapped my £35 a month iPhone tariff to a 10 quid version, which will do me, really. Mm. And so I've decided to hold on to my older iPhone rather than sort of upgrade to a 4S because it comes to a point that I know this is a camera show and I shouldn't really be talking about this, but it comes to a point that the functionality of a phone isn't really increasing that much for me to spend an extra 25 quid a month for just slightly faster software or slightly faster response, you know. So I wonder with a phone like this, maybe it's something like a really good quality camera or as you say, maybe apps or something like that will be the key selling point rather than who makes the operating system.
But I think the point is that what's going to sell this phone, people aren't going to buy this just on 41 megapixels and the fact it's a good camera because they can go and buy a good camera. They want a phone, and if they want a phone, they want apps that go with that phone, and they're not going to get apps to go with this because it's Symbian.
Doesn't it get to a point, though, that my small knowledge of photography, that the megapixel only goes up to a certain point, and then you've got to concentrate things on bit depth and the lens and all sorts of extra stuff that really isn't just the 41 megapixels just a selling point. It sounds great in copy, but as far as practically it's concerned, I would have thought that, well, particularly the lens would be more important than anything else, wouldn't it?
They're saying that the thing with this, though, is it's the post-processing that's the key part. So your pixel is only a pinprick that gathers a point of light in red, green, or blue, or all three, and then it processes it. And it's the post-processing in this phone that makes it very different, the way that it takes the number of pixels and then crunches them to give a small pixel a big view like you would get with a bigger sensor. So it's trying to mimic a bigger sensor in the way that it processes. I don't know a lot. I'm not up to the technical stuff of it. I haven't read how it processes it, but that's the theory of it, is that it gives out a more big sensor-like image. And I've seen three or four images of it, and there's one on Chris's article. And if you're talking about it's been taken on a cell phone, there's nothing wrong with it.
Quantization.
Quantization, is that what you reckon?
No, that's what. Yeah, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Quantization. The development of the... Oh, sorry.
Done.
I was going to say the development of the raw data or raw image, if you like, into because it's all about bit depth, isn't it? So when they're taking it into a JPEG, which is an 8-bit image, it's that quantization process to accurately sort of join the colours together. Anyway, they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see how it sells when it comes out, probably later in the year. I don't think it's out now, so.
Go on, Martin. What do you think to that? I thought that was impressive.
That was very impressive.
That is why you're here.
Yeah. It's a shame there.
Superb, mate. See?
Sticking in the mobile world.
Chat room's gone quiet. They are they are stunned.
So am I.
A stunned silence.
Also this week, Adobe launches Photoshop Touch for the iPad 2. Has anyone had a play?
I have not, because I can't, because it's only available for iPad 2.
Oh,
and I've got an iPad 1 because I'm a tight git. I'm waiting for a 3. I'll get a 3 next week when it's out, but I'm not getting it. The pictures on it look nice, but the reports have been reasonably tepid. People were saying, well, you know, it does certain things very well, but then other people are saying it's a complete bag. I follow a guy on Twitter called The Drew, and he's had a play with it, and I can't repeat his tweets because of the expletives that are used on it. But it's got a broad brush range. It gets you a lot closer to Photoshop, from what I've understood of the free stuff that's gone in the past. Mm-hmm. But I think the problem that they've got is that they've looked at the things that they've had in previous free Photoshop-esque type stuff, where it's flown it up to the cloud and that kind of thing, and come back. And this one does the very basics, but doesn't get you close enough to Photoshop for people to suggest that it's worth the money, because it's about £14, isn't it?
It's $6.99.
It's the other one that's 14 quid. No, I mean, if you look at what I do day to day on photographs, I open an image, and once I've pushed it through a RAW processor and had a go with the exposure and maybe boosted the foreground a little bit, if I was opening a JPEG, all I'd be doing is correcting for levels, a bit of dodge and burn, and then sharpen and then save it again. So if that's doing this, and it's doing it at full resolution on images, then it could be a really good viable alternative, and at $6.99, it's a damn sight cheaper than the 500 quid that I pay for Photoshop, which I'll never pay for again.
Actually, I haven't tried importing a RAW image yet from the camera card.
I don't know if it does RAW support, does it?
Like I say, I should have checked that. I totally forgot. I've just import JPEG, so.
But I mean, so what have you found with it, if you've had a play?
I've had to play, yeah, like I say, I just bring the picture in, I was playing around, I was like putting layers on and adding sort of effects to the pictures, and just general messing around. Probably you could do on any other the standard apps, but it did feel, sometimes it seemed to be pushing the processor a bit. So hopefully when the iPad 3 comes out and that's got a faster processor in, which we're all thinking it will have, it'll be able to manage the software, you know, the engine a lot better, shall we say.
It's got a kind of Lightroom front end, hasn't it?
It also, when you're making the adjustments, you can't see them live. It's only when you release, then it suddenly jumps into whatever you've done. So you can't, you know, sort of gradually increase things and see what they look like.
That's going to get boring quickly, isn't it?
Mm. But it's like a version one, so to speak, so they can always do updates. Will, have you had a play?
I have. I think it's probably one of the most accomplished photo editors for the iPad yet. I think it's reasonably priced, and I think it's got some nice, I don't know, it's a bit sort of eye candy, but I like the way that it kind of visually separates the layers. So if somebody's coming to sort of the concept of layers for the first time. It's rather flash the way that it, you know, sort of separates these layers in this sort of 3D environment. It's good. I like it.
Russ in the chat room says that there's an image limit of 1600 by 1600 pixels, and Kev suggests that Carl's finding that the trouble with the play and go is because of he can't get the breast enlargements correct.
These people know me too well.
So worth the money, Will?
Oh, I think so. I mean, the trouble with the iPad, you sort of lose sort of sense of what money is in a sense, don't you? Because it's just think, oh, that's only 69p. I'll buy that. And you feel yourself sucked into this. And when you see such a great looking application and sort of a household name in the tech world bringing out a household product, you just can't help yourself but buy it, even if you're never going to use it particularly.
Mm. That's very true. Ewan, as a professional, has the iPad worked its way into your daily routine when you're taking shots?
Yeah, it's not worked its way into a daily routine for editing. It's basically more to do with the fact that I'll take the images over and show clients on it if I haven't got my laptop with me or something like that. Or if I'm somewhere and I want to just see what images are, I've got the card camera kit. So I'll bung it in and stick an SD card and away you go. One of the limiting factors is the fact that I haven't got anything to do a compact flash card, because I shoot with compact flash an awful lot more than I do with SD now.
SD.
More reliable. I had too many SD cards blow out on me.
I see. Also, so Ewan, sticking with you, Mr. Canon man, the 5D Mark III, it's official. It's been announced. Any surprises in there?
No, I mean, it's a great spec. There was the rumour that came out the other week, wasn't there, about the spec that was going to come. And all of that seems to have been resounded. And it seems that the little spy shot that they got of the bloke at the games that was using it seems to be true. It's come out, it's beautiful titanium alloy body. Apparently it's quite heavy though, which is surprising. You'd have thought they'd have gone for something a little bit more light, but not flimsy. 64, was it 1020, where's it gone? 102-400 ISO for the range. And I'm quite hopeful at that, because I've criticised Canon for saying that they're not keeping up with Nokia in the low light stuff. And I bought a 600D the other week just to have a play around with the video. And it's got an 18 megapixel sensor and goes up to 6400 ISO. Now, the 6400 ISO is as unusable as the 3200 ISO is on my 1DS Mark II, but the 3200 ISO is very passable. And if you shot that and put it against the 1200 ISO shot from my pro camera, I don't think you'd find a lot of difference in the two. There's some images I've taken. Two sets of images on 100 ISO to compare against the Pro versus the 600D, and there's little differences, but you know there's some color correction issues that go on with the 600D, but they're really not that noticeable unless you've got a comparison image next to you. If you got it as a straight image, you'd say it was a perfectly adequate professional image. And I've got to say, hats off Canon, because the low light stuff on the 600D for a cheap camera at the £600 mark, I think, is absolutely cracking at the moment. They've really stepped up to the plate, and I'm really hopeful that this camera's going to work out really well. But they're talking about $3,500, and they're talking about UK price is going to be £3,000. So they haven't got the exchange rate right there.
Nope.
And that's quite a lot. Mm-hmm. It is quite a lot for it. I think it's probably about £600 or £700 overpriced for that. If they'd have hit 2.5, I think I'd have cancelled my new MacBook Pro and gone for a Mark III instead.
So, Will, have you got £3,000 laying around?
No. I lost the plot a bit because I was waiting for Apple subscription TV service by Christmas. And then I thought, oh, that's not next. And it said the iPad 3 to be called iPad HD. And I realised I'm reading the wrong show notes, aren't I?
Yes. I think you are. Yes.
That'll be another hour's time yet, mate.
I see, what the hell are they talking about? £2,500 for a camera. That's without
three,
a lens.
£3,000 for a camera.
Three grand for a camera.
Just the body, I think.
Just the body. So it's obviously like. Now I'm not. I don't know much about how much you would want to spend on. That is a pro camera, isn't it? That's not.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. So is that about the average price for a pro camera?
No, I mean my 1DS was top of the range when I bought it, and it was 6,500.
Wow. So that's. So is it like prosumer level then, is it?
Well, I think pros will use this. I certainly would. I mean, the image quality that's going to come off it, I don't think is going to be down at all on what I currently shoot. At the moment, my current camera shoots 18 megapixels, but it's a very high quality sensor. It's a very big sensor, so I'm not looking at trying to crunch pixels down and that kind of thing. This is a full frame camera as well, so that's going to be a very big sensor on the back.
I reckon
that the image on quality on this is going to be at least equal, if not better, to what I've currently got. And of course, it's actually a bigger image. I don't really need a bigger image because I don't shoot that kind of stuff for billboards particularly. I would buy it because it's new, because it's got the video feature. And I've got to say, I'm really taken with the video feature on the D600. It's beautiful. If you put it on manual focus with a really good quality lens, the results are amazing. Really, really fantastic. I'd buy this for having one camera that did video and stills at high quality that I could then use with a battery pack or something like that to take it up to a bigger size. I'd sell the 1DS Mark II, and I'd sell the 450D and just keep the 600D as my backup body, and that'd be it.
It's all about size, isn't it, you camera boys?
No, it's not, mate.
It is. It really isn't. Seeing you. You stick the extra battery pack on, whether you need it or not, just to bulk up the size of the beast. Then get the biggest lens you can get on, swinging it around in your hand.
No,
I mean, they look professional.
No. Hang on, stop there.
Okay. Hello?
Hello? Is he going to go and get his huge camera?
He's going to show off his size.
My camera, in the bottom, the whole of that bottom of that battery pack there is battery. And that's 7 hours of continuous shooting right there. Now, you get one of those little tiny batteries that go in the sides of the D600 and that kind of thing. You'll probably get about 2 hours out of it. 2.5 hours on continuous shooting, maybe. This thing is, the replacement batteries do just as well. And I've had that battery since I bought the camera. And that's going back 7 years. And
You're telling me, right? Now, be honest, absolutely honest. If they brought out a camera that scientifically they could prove took exactly the same quality pictures as that camera, right, but was a quarter of the size, would you buy it?
I got fat pork sausages for hands, so there's...
No, you see, it's all about size with you lot. I know, who's got the biggest camera?
No. There's a certain element of this where if you've got longer lenses on smaller bodies, it's very difficult to keep them stable. The extra size and weight actually helps with throwing them around. Carl, you've had a go with...
Very true, actually, yes.
You've got a 5100 Nikon, and you stick a big long lens on that and start throwing it around, and it gets very, very light at the back end. It's kind of like, I reckon it's like a sword. You know, it's all about the weight in the pommel that's to do with the maneuverability of the front end. Yeah. Whereas if the front end's heavy, it swings, but then you've got no counterbalance to stop that movement. It's very easy. Right. I find it very difficult to shoot with the 450D if I have to. And move quickly.
Holding a big camera is like holding a sword.
No, that's not what I said.
You did say that.
No, I think it's like a sword in that the pommel weight is what helps the movement of the front end. If the front end would be heavy, you'd find that the sword would be very difficult to wield. And I think it's the same if you've got a long lens. Shut up, Greeny. Leave me alone.
Moving on.
I'm not asking him again.
I wouldn't come on a show that asked me in the first place, to be honest.
What was that hand strap, says Steve? It's available from Photo Jojo. It sits on the side and it goes in your little thing here. Or you can use, there's like a little strappy thing that you can use instead. But it's great. It just means, because I hate using camera straps, but it means I can not drop my camera. It's lovely. $40, and it arrived within a couple of days with a tiny dinosaur as well as.
Moving on. We've got a new section of the show now called What Six Things. This is based on a question that we got from Steve a couple of weeks ago. What it is I'm going to pose a scenario to our pros, and they're going to tell us the six things that they would use or bring along to that scenario. So this week, it's going to be how to take, if they was invited to do a baby portrait, say the new friends have got a fresh, new, brand new baby, and they've asked you, because you've got the decent looking camera, to come along and do some shots for them. What would you take along with you? Or how would you approach the shoot? So Ewan, what three things would you, because we're going to ask you for three, and then we're going to ask Will for three as well.
Okay. Something that's squeaky and bright. So some bright coloured that when you move it in your hand, you can get attention. And all if you can squeeze it, it gives off a little squeaky sound because that'll attract them regardless of where they're looking. It depends on the age of the baby. If they're really, really young, you're going to have to bring something to support them. And usually things like cushions and that type of stuff's no good. I've got a roll of foam in the loft that's shaped. So you can put it underneath a cloth or something like that to get the... Or you can get it underneath the baby so that they sit and prop up in it. There's nothing worse, I think, than shooting against a backdrop where it's clear that the baby's leaning against the backdrop. So brand new babies, I think, are far better shot in their parents' arms than they are in like, you know, put them down there and then I'll shoot while they're leaning up against a green screen or something. It's just not good at all. And what else? Poor blimey. Most of the thing with kids is just like attention, getting them to come around, and even like almost newborn babies, you can still get them to turn their heads and things like that if they've got the manipulation in it to just to the sound and noise and stuff. So I'll have a think of another one.
Okay, Will, any suggestions?
Number one, get the dad to take his shirt off, right, and then hold the baby naked, and the dad's naked as well.
That depends on the dad somewhat, doesn't it?
No, it's good. This is good. This is proper retro. So we've got naked
dad, Athena naked posters.
That's what we want. That's where it's all been going wrong all these years. Number two, do you remember what they used to do years ago? They used to have when you're walking past a photographer's shop, and the baby would be naked on a big sort of shaggy rug thing.
Yeah,
that's very important. You need that as well.
A shaggy rug.
Yeah, shaggy rug. Number one, naked dad. Number two, shaggy rug.
Actually, I've got a naked dad attachment that goes on my bag.
That's what you want.
It's like a hook.
Well, you could take one of those t-shirts for the dad, you know, like the muscle t-shirts. So it looks like he's naked, but he's got a really good body, you know.
And a third one, dare I ask, though?
I've run out of steam for the third one.
I would have said wet wipes.
Yeah.
Something to clean up stuff afterwards.
Having a baby of my own.
Long lens, so you don't have to get no close to the damn thing.
Also,
Gordo says butler Calpol in the chat room.
Yeah, drug him up.
Calpol is the wonder drug, mate. We were going out this morning. Bryony's like on the sofa. I don't feel well. Quick squirt of Calpol. 5 minutes later, she's like, come on, we're going. So Calpol, I agree. Gordy's probably nearer the mark than he should be there.
So nothing else, Will. You can't think of another one.
A third one. In all seriousness, having a baby of my own, I would... they're all different, though, aren't they? I suppose, yeah. Something with bright lights to keep them... sort of keep them mesmerised, stunned dart or something. But, yeah, along those lines.
Dart gun, I'd forgotten that one.
That's yeah.
It. Good point,
you need
mate.
A bit of that.
Good point.
Ewan, did you come up with your third one?
Yeah, wet wipes.
Oh, wet wipes. Okay.
There you go.
So apart from the holding it in your arms, any posing suggestions or anything like that, or just what you can get away with?
Upside down by the feet. Always looks good.
I would say that, like I said, if you've got brand newborn babies, I think they look crap against backgrounds. I've never seen a decent picture unless it's kind of like really, really tight in on the face of the baby, that kind of thing. So holding in the parents' arms is always a better one than that. That's the only real big tip. And attention, get attention all the time. If they're 18 months old or something like that, getting them stand still is going to be the problem. So, super glue.
Right, okay. So
how
anyone
did you feel that new section went then, Carl?
Oh, I thought that was great. Yes, thanks for that. I was expecting three photographers to give me answer tips, though.
Steve in the chat room has got a dog and he says he wants some pet tips next week. There you go.
Okay, pet tips next week. We got next week's one theme already. There you go.
Six things for
pet portraits.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do a jingle and a graphic for that.
Okie dokie. Right, shall we move on to some questions then?
Absolutely.
Okay, first one's from Steve via Twitter. Here's a question for this week's show. Please explain what the lens sizes, 40 and 50 millimeter, etc., mean.
The lens millimeterage is the distance from the capture medium to the optical center of the lens. And it's assuming that it's rated back to a 35 millimeter capture medium. So a 35 millimeter capture medium is film used to be 135 film used to be 35 millimeter across the sprockets from top to bottom. There was actually no other measurement on the film that was 35 millimeters because the film's actually 36 millimeters wide and 24 millimeters high. The 35 mil is to round it back to how it would look against a 35 millimeter capture medium. And the focal length, I have got some cards here for you to quickly demonstrate. If you're on the audio podcast, this is useless, but so imagine, here we go. There's your, I've picked a wrong colour, haven't I? There's green. What a muppet. So here's your capture medium in green. And your light travels in a straight line. Oh, there we go. One. And two. So there we go. So the light goes to the edge of the capture medium. And then it goes through and inverts inside the lens. So it goes, the top goes to the bottom and the bottom goes to the top. So if I put that in there, there we go. So what you effectively get is the capture medium and then the optical center of the lens doing that. And if the skewers here look, represent the light from the bottom of the image goes to the top of the sensor and from the top of the image goes down to the bottom of the sensor. This is the optical center of the lens. If I pull it in, you can see that the focal length shortens. So at 35 millimeters, I've got a wider field of view. And as I then go up to about 200 millimeters or something like that, you can see that it goes down into a very narrow cone. So what I've got then is a very narrow field of view with a 200 millimeter lens. And the distance from that optical center to the capture medium there is what varies. And that's the millimeters. And it's always rated against it going onto a 135 capture medium, so a 35 mil film. Now the crop factoring is where you've got 35 millimeters, there we go, but because of the fact it isn't going onto a 35 millimeter wide plate, it's actually going onto something far smaller, the image that's going onto it is going to be magnified because the sensor is capturing less of the area of the film, therefore it's going to be bigger on the output medium. So that's why 35 millimeters lenses aren't, they're 50 millimeters when they're output. Did that make sense?
I think so. I'm going to, when it's on video, I'm going to have to watch it again because I can't see video at this point.
There you go. That's the truth.
Will, anything to add?
No, that's me done, I think.
Well, Steve asked the question. He's in the chat room. He says, superb demo and answer. So stuff the lot of you.
Okay. Second question. Hi, guys. Thanks for the informative and entertaining show.
Where did you get that for you, Ewan? Did you make that?
What?
That thing you've just been wheeled in.
Yeah, it's two skewers from the barbecue and two bits of card. But the card's bloody green like an arse because I've got the green screen on. But basically, if I put them down a bit, there you go. If I put them down a bit, you see there's one medium and then that's meant to be the optical center. And the optical center causes the field of view look to widen or narrow. So that's why it's 400 millimeter lens is very, very narrow and a 50 milliliter lens is very, very wide. There you go.
If you take one of the bits of cardboard off and put it on your face, what happens?
I'll amuse you. Here we go. There we go.
I can't see. That's a look.
Aye, aye.
That's ace.
Sorry if you're listening to the audio. Watching the audio, that doesn't work either.
No. Get the video. Go on. Do both. Everyone should be downloading both anyway, whether you listen to them or not.
Okay, question two. Hi, guys. Thanks for the informative and entertaining show. Keep up the great work and well done, Carl. Sure they're watching this show? I'm not sure. I have Photoshop CS5, Bridge and Lightroom. Some of my photographer friends say that all they use is Lightroom and don't need to use Photoshop or Bridge. Some, myself included, use Bridge and Photoshop and it's now a bit like Canon versus Nikon war. Which is better? What would be the benefits of using Bridge over Lightroom or Lightroom over Bridge? I don't know if I would get any benefit from learning to use Lightroom. David.
A bridge over troubled water.
That's very true. Ewan, what one do you prefer?
Neither. Sorry.
Okay.
I've got Aperture, which I use, but I tend to use that just to find images. I don't use it for processing images at all. If I process images, the one thing that I use to process even raw images, and I find it far, far better initially, is Preview. My workflow is to open absolutely everything I've got, RAW or JPEG, in Preview. I can see it very quickly. It comes up very quickly because of the fact it's not using all of the processing power of it. But then all you've got to do when you see an image that you like in preview is grab hold of it and drag it down to the Photoshop icon, and it'll open the original image immediately in Photoshop. And then you've got the bridge editor for RAW. And once you've done that, that's you're in. I tend to find that I trust my own file management better than I trust anything else's. So I tend to just file stuff in folders, and I've got sequences for the folders and categories for the folders that I keep it in for different types of commercial work. And usually I can find an image quite quickly.
Mm. Will, do you use any cataloging software?
Yes, I use Aperture.
Aperture as well?
Mm. I've used it since the very first one, although the latest version, I'm not very happy with it. It seems very buggy. I mean, what gets me, you know, with all the software with Lion, you get this full screen thing. You click on full screen. With Aperture, it makes it full screen, but not in the way you want it to. It's like with Aperture, there used to be like the standard interface. Then there was the full screen interface when you want to edit photos and stuff. But so when you do full screen now in Aperture, instead of going to like a full screen standard view, if that makes sense, it takes you straight into the full screen for editing. Right. Nightmare. So yeah. I'm not very happy with the new Aperture. I think it's not very good.
I'm not overly impressed with full screen, full stop in Apple at the minute. Steve in the chat room says, if I'm editing from Aperture out to Photoshop Elements, but when you save in Photoshop Elements, the edited picture doesn't appear in Aperture. If you're taking Aperture and your preferred editing output in the preferences is Photoshop Elements, when you then save, it should appear back in Aperture as a version. It might be stacked, though. Will, how do you get around stacks? How do you show stacks?
You can just turn them off.
In Aperture, because it does a stack back, doesn't it? There's like three images all together, or it spreads them out sideways if you want.
Well, you can obviously you can alter the sort of the level of the stack on time. The thing is, if you've got, because it's exactly the same image, it's going to be stacking is all about time, organizing by time. So it's for like a tethered shoot, you know. And so I want to keep all images taken within 1 second of each other. As a stack, it's not. That's what that's for. It's not about really a way of managing.
Can't you stack versions though?
You can, but
they stack backwards.
But it's not. It's not meant for that because, okay. As I say, it's meant for like bracketing shoots and stuff like that. It's stacking. Is about that. It's about the grouping images that were taken at the same time. If you're editing an image and then bringing it back in again, the metadata is obviously going to be exactly the same as far as timestamp is concerned. So you'd want to turn stacks off in that particular instance.
Okay.
Also, Kevin in the chat room says the benefit of Lightroom over Aperture is it can read your normal folder structure without moving your images around.
Mm. Aperture doesn't have to move your images around, does it? You don't have to put them in the Aperture file structure. You can tell them to leave in the original content where it is. All it does is stop the references.
Yeah, I thought you can do that.
Yeah. And Kev says that full screen works well on a MacBook Air. Small screen, so I haven't got one of those.
Are you tempted?
I was tempted when I had to play with yours, but it just doesn't have got enough processing power now. I mean, if they were to bump it up and give it 8 gig of RAM, if it had got 8 gig of RAM, I would have probably had one. But instead,
you never play with mine.
Have you got one?
No.
You haven't bought an Air. Okay. I bought a new MacBook Pro, so because I like
mine was two generations old though, Ewan. So it's not the brand new one. Is what I'm saying.
No, but the new one's only 4 gig max RAM, and you can't add anything to it because it's soldered to the board. So if they did an 8 gig version or an 8 gig upgrade, then I probably would have bought an Air over a MacBook Pro. But I can't. I need a second drive as well. This one here has got a 256 gig SSD, and it's got a 1 terabyte secondary drive, which I need that extra drive for storing photos. I just got so much crap. And I still use a third-party drive outside of that I plug in at night that's got films and things on to watch in the hotel. So thanks to AirPlay from you, mate.
AirPlay, fantastic little app. Moving on, question 3. What are pros and cons of using a mirror telephoto as opposed to a normal telephoto lens? The mirror lens seems cheaper than a normal telephoto lens of the same focal length. Also, would you know if the image quality would be less using a mirror lens over a standard lens? It looked to me that a standard telephoto lens can be faster than a mirror lens, but a lot more expensive. Pros and cons of both would be appreciated. Thanks for any advice on both of these questions. Regards, David. Ewan?
mirror lenses are always fixed at f8. I've never seen one that's not. So the problem that you're starting there is your f-stop straight away knocks you down to very fast image capture, probably even on reasonably good days. They're great for things that aren't going to move very much. So if you're talking about you get a 500mm mirror lens and you set it up in the garden, because they're so short and stubby, because they're bouncing the light backwards and forwards again and down to the sensor, they mean that you can get a lot less camera shake with them because there's not as much hanging out the front. And if you're shooting something where you wouldn't care about being f8 because you want a 20-minute exposure or something like that, They're pound for pound, there's no difference there. There's a lot better there because they're really, really cheap usually. If you want one to take out and shoot like a bird at some distance that's going to be flying, unless it's a really bright day, you're probably going to be wasting your time because you're going to have to shove your ISO right the way up to the point that it's going to get grainy as hell and horrible. Whenever you buy a lens, you've got to think to yourself, what is the circumstance I'm going to use it? And if the circumstance is something that's fast moving in potentially like a winter's day where it's quite low light, then you've got to think, well, I need something that's got far, far lower f-stop so that I can get that image capture speed. Or you've got to have a camera that's really good quality up to high ISOs. But I always kind of take my goal as being, if I was shooting at 100 ISO, would it do the job? And more often than not, you'll find a mirror won't.
Will, anything to add?
No, I think that's... well done, Ewan. I think you've answered pretty much everything I would have said as well.
I mean, the big change is price. Mirror lenses are dirt cheap. You can go onto eBay, you'll find a mirror lens in there that'd be great, and 600mm or something like that. And if you're talking about you want 600mm because you want to spy at someone in the house on the opposite side of the road, it's going to be no use because by the time it gets in and actually gets the light level up in the room that you're looking at, if they're moving around in that room, they're just going to be a blur anyway, so... It's good for things like long distance.
It's an interesting example you've used.
Yeah, I was wondering why you went there with that one.
Well, I can't think of any other reason why you'd buy a 600mm lens that's mirrored. If you think about it, you use it for bird spotting, the bird's probably going to move, so it's not going to be fast enough. You can't use it for sport because it doesn't focus. You have to do manual focus on it. Then none of them do autofocus as well. So I forgot that bit. And I can't think of an application where you'd have a 500mm lens, 600mm mirror lens, and be really happy with it. I shot one at rugby with it, and it was good, but I had high ISOs, and it was a grainy, horrible, crappy image at the end of it.
Your advice is don't buy one.
I think if you've got an application where you're clearly going to be able to shoot in low ISO with the long lens, and it'll give you a quality image out, they will give you a great image, but the problem is if you're going to be able to keep the low ISO because they're all set at f8. I've never seen one that's not. I'll stand corrected gladly because someone's going to write an email and tell me I'm talking out my arse, but there you go.
Okay, moving on. Question 4. Hi, chaps. Here's a quick question for you. I've got a bunch of old photos that I want to scan. Once the images are scanned, I can do a bit of editing, email them out to family members, etc. I'm using an iMac and a cheapo HP DeskJet printer scanner with an image capture application that comes with the Mac OS. What I would like to know is what kind of settings would you recommend to get good quality image good image quality without going stupid with the file size. How many DPIs are enough? TIFF or PNG? What dull questions? Sorry, there's no dull questions. Thanks, James. And he's got a PS after that, but we'll deal with the question first. Ewan?
If you're scanning at 600 DPI off 35mm film, you usually get really, really good results anyway, and your file size is going to be probably equivalent to 8 megapixel-ish, something like that, which would be very acceptable. If you certainly want to just email stuff out to the family, then it's fine. If you're talking about keeping a low quality image for posterity and it doesn't really matter because it's only going to be for Auntie Maud to look at periodically on her iPad, then you're wasting your time doing TIFF and PNG. Just whack it straight into JPEG. If you want to keep quality and you want to do a lot more maneuverability with it, I would say TIFF, because it's a bit more flexible in the file format. Sometimes PNG corrupts depending on where you're shoving it. Some of the internet stuff doesn't like PNG. When you put it in, it corrupts the colours and things like that.
I see. Will, anything to add?
Not really. Make sure you're... Thank you. Make sure you're... If you're at TIFF, it's an 8-bit TIFF, not a 16-bit TIFF.
Because?
Because there's no point.
Doesn't add anything to
Mate,
it.
Mate, you've got some knowledge here. Use it. Explain. Go ahead.
Well, because there's no point. You'll have great big images, size-wise, quality-wise, it'll be exactly the same.
Because it's bit depth, which is color quality. It's color separation. The quality. It's not actually improving the structure of the pixel, etc.
That's right. Yeah, bit depth.
There you go.
Okay, and James's PS was just a quick note on DMG in last week's show. I use Lightroom 3 as my main photo editor organizer, and there is no option to convert to DNG on import. I shoot 95% of the time in RAW, and Lightroom does the DNG conversion as soon as I import any images. As I understand it, DNG file is a non-proprietary format and also retains all the RAW information, although I have been wrong before. That's very... pretty sound there.
The Skype banger.
Is that right, Ewan? Because
I've never done anything with DNG in my entire life. I had no knowledge of it whatsoever until Alex gave an explanation last week. So, yes. Will probably knows more than I do.
About DMGs?
Yeah.
Why would you want to... Tell me what...
Because I had a question last week about how to make sure that you could save a file in a format that will be future-proof. And Alex suggested you use digital negative, I think it was.
Yeah, you're thinking DMG, Will, and it's not, it's DNG.
I know nothing about DFG at all. And how's that going to be more future-proof than anything? Print it out. That's what you want to do.
And put it in a book.
Exactly.
There you go, just like the old days. This show... and all the other shows on the network couldn't be possible without our sponsor, UK2.net. Please support us by supporting them. If you just go to our website, bageltechnews.com, and scroll down to the UK2.net link, go in there and use the offer code BAGELTECH, and you'll get 15% off any services you purchase. If you use BAGELTECH DNS, they'll waive any DNS handling charges as well. It's a great site, but the thing I keep playing with recently is Site Builder. You can go in there and build an entire website with just a few mouse clicks and dragging sliders here and there. And we're always going on about Facebook. Well, I'm always going on about Facebook and Flickr and places like that. But if you really want to take control of your own photos, the best place to show your own photos is on your own website. You have total control, and you know they're never going to go away unless you decide to take them away, of course.
And it's so much better by mistake.
Or delete them by mistake. And it's so much better if you just give out a web address that is basically your own name.com. It's so professional looking.
It does.
It's quick. Rather than saying, just go to Facebook and look at me up on Facebook, you can say, go to coldmadden.com, which is my one, by the way. So, guys, where can we get you? Ewan?
You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter or at Bagel Tech News on Twitter as well. And you can get me at ewanrankin.co.uk for commercial photography work.
And Will, where can we get you, sir?
BritishMac.com.
And we're going to change our name as well.
Yes, we are. So we're no longer going to be Bagel.
No, bagels are off the menu. We're going to be the British Tech Network. That starts on the 1st of April. And all of the shows are going to be BTN Mac, BTN Big, etc., etc. So this one will become Photo as well. You're going to have to resubscribe to all the feeds because we've got so many old crappy feeds from when we were BagelTech.net kicking around that we're going to just say, right, clean slate, start all over again. Hopefully you'll all come over. It could be a bad move if you don't, but that way it'll be cleaner and the stats will be better and that kind of thing. So there you go.
And we also got to look into our things like our Facebook page and our Flickr page, what we're going to do with them as well, I think.
You're on it, mate.
Thanks. Oh, that's my job now, is it? I've been assigned.
People last night in the chat room were coming up with as many things as they could to do with BTN. And Kev's come up with burgled title network.
I can think of another one, but I'm not going to say the one I'm thinking of. That'll be if it all goes horribly wrong. It'll be title network.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks everyone for joining us. My name's Carl Madden. You can get me on Twitter at claw0101. Until next time, happy snapping, enjoy yourself, and see you soon.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting solutions.